So I'm going to start and go right into my slide deck and talk about CDC's history and current systems profile, kind of a state of affairs of our CDC portfolio of applications, investment trends, our portfolio composition, and then new influences and imperatives that are on the horizon. Some of this, of you who have been here last year, much of the introductory slides about our systems portfolio is going to be somewhat familiar, although we have another year or two of data in here. But the real important things are what's on the horizon, what's driving our directions, what's coming up in the near future. And again, this is a repeat from last year largely, but I wanted to accentuate the fact that we've had a history for now that we've been tracing over 30 years of what do we spend on IT at CDC. And in the 80s, we had a compound annual growth rate of spending of around 6%. And then in the 90s, it jumped up to 12-13%. And then we had a huge skyrocket in the early part of the 21st century, driven by 9-1-1, of course, in large part. And then we plateaued. Around 2003 or 4, we hit a high watermark, both on what we spend intramurally on systems and infrastructure and so forth, as well as extramurally. We began around 2000, 2001 with NEDS and the immunization registries and then the public health preparedness grants, giving out money to states to help build national infrastructure across all of the United States with our partners, state health departments, local health departments. But we plateaued on that perspective as well and have somewhat dipped even more recently. And what's really interesting and challenging about this is, you know, we always are driven to do more and more, but now we're not having more financial investment to be able to do more, so we have to get smarter, and we have to do it better, and you're going to hear a little bit more about that later. In the lower right-hand corner, that graph shows what we have been investing and spending in our IT infrastructure, which is critical to the success of our applications portfolio. How our data management and our data storage and our network and our communication systems support that entire enterprise of applications and data collection and analysis and so forth. Similarly, when we launched or we created the IT services office in 2003 and 4, we were at a spend rate prior to that of about $113 million a year, growing on average 3% a year. And so that blue line shows what that trajectory would be today if we hadn't consolidated the infrastructure. You look at this actual spending represented by the reddish line of, and we've stayed absolutely flatlined over a 7-8 year horizon. And so that's real compliment to ISO and all of the other contributors around the agency of how we've been able to deliver more and more services better and faster and cheaper as a result, driven largely by the financial or budgetary pressures or constraints. But also, we've built a lot of new services, offered a lot of new capabilities around the agencies in spite of those slim financial circumstances. So a slide here, a little bit about our investment composition at CDC. This is not a depiction of our systems. You'll see that in the next slide. But this is how OMB and the department and we characterize our investment portfolio. We have six so-called major investments. These are the big ticket items, include our IT infrastructure as one of those buckets, and then the other ones are like BioSense and NEDS and NSAR and VTREX, the big vaccine ordering system that NCIRD runs. Anyway, those six average out at a cost of $23 million roughly. And when John talks, he's going to talk about the Vivek Kundra's and OMB's 25-point improvement plan, a reform plan for IT management. And one of the principles in there is chunk up large projects and large initiatives into smaller bite-sized pieces so that they're faster, more agile, and more successful. And you'll see, particularly in the next slide, when we look at the actual systems portfolio, we largely do that at CDC. We have very few major systems. The tacticals are kind of mid-size, on average $5 million a pop, and then a lot of supporting investments, under $1 million a piece. And these are actually large collections of or buckets of individual systems, and you'll see that better reflected in the next slide. And then lastly, our seven primary extramural investments, much larger in average, but that's because each of these investments typically go out to 50 states or 50-plus states and territories and some large cities. So all in all, that's kind of a profile of our $500 million investment annually at CDC in technology and systems. This just depicts that two-thirds of our spend, our entire IT spend, is intramurally, and one-third goes out extramurally to our state and local health department partners. This is a trending slide of actual system counts as opposed to investment counts. The blue bars show new systems that have come into our portfolio each year for the last 6 years. The green bars show retired systems. And then the line graph here just shows the total composition of how many systems we have in our counted portfolio by year. And it dipped in the around 2007 and 8, and it's on the upswing again. Some of this is an anomaly of surveillance, so to speak. In other words, just like in public health surveillance for a particular health condition, when you put more focus on a particular disease or health event and you get a lot more marketing or attention to it, you tend to see a spike in counting. Well, there's a similar phenomenon here in the last couple of years around the increase in the number of systems, largely driven by the fact that the department and we have been putting a lot of focus on getting comparability or alignment between what we were counting in the information security bucket, systems that had to go through certification and accreditation, and what we had in our official enterprise systems catalog bucket of the inventory of systems. So we had a lot of systems that had been CNA'd in the security realm, but they weren't being shown in our enterprise systems catalog for whatever reason, largely because they were small systems that were web-based interactive systems that had to be CNA'd, but they weren't necessarily considered by the programs as investments, and they didn't get into the catalog. Well, we've been reconciling that for the past couple of years, and that's largely driven that large increase. But the takeaway here is largely that our portfolio is constantly dynamic. Systems going, being retired, you know, living out their useful life and being sunset. And on the other flip side, we're constantly generating needs for and actually launching new system efforts all throughout CDC. This table shows a, this now goes to the system level rather than the investment level, and shows that we have roughly 560 systems at CDC that we know of that are in the catalog, and what the count is by organization, what the total spend is for each of those organizations on IT, and then what the average cost per system is. And when you look at the bottom average at the bottom, or the last row, you'll see that our average system cost is under $500,000. And that goes back to what I was saying before about small, bite-sized system efforts. Some of the bigger ones like OCELs have, you know, BioSense and NEDS, and so they have more significant systems, and consequently their average cost per system is higher. And similarly, OID has the largest number of systems, but on average, they hit right on this CDC-wide average on cost per system. This is a depiction of the criticality indication by each system is classified or categorized by its system criticality by the system owners. And you'll see, you know, we have a fairly even distribution of criticality designations from low, medium, and high, medium being the most prevalent. Life cycle phase. So each system also gets to designate in the catalog and the investment portfolio. Is it in a development and modernization phase? You know, is it a new system just being developed? Or is it one that's being, you know, a new upgrade or a revision underway that's significant in that event, and it is in that red category of, sorry, in the blue category of development and modernization. If it's in the red, then it's in a steady state or operation and maintenance phase, and it's a roughly even split between the two across the entire portfolio. So in the OMB IT Federal IT dashboard, this is a depiction of HHS's portfolio, of which there are there are 805 major IT investments across the U.S. federal government. And the average score on those ranges from, or sorry, the range of scores by department and major agency across the federal government is 5.5 to 9 on a scale of 10. So that's how the respective departments and OMB score the federal IT investments across all the federal government. HHS has 70 major investments with an average rating of 6.8. And you'll see that we have, you know, as a department, we have some that are in the red and some in the yellow and a majority in the green, thankfully. CDC's portfolio, again, we only have 6 of those 70 in HHS, but we do quite well. No red, less yellow, and more green. And our average rating is 8.4 for those 6. So congratulations, I think, all contributors to this, not just the 6 large ones, but across the board. You know, as an agency, we do pretty well in our earned value management reporting, our schedule and cost reporting, how well we manage the portfolio in general. Of course, there's always room for improvement, and John's going to tell us how to improve, and Vivek Kundra's telling us how to improve through his 25-point management reform plan. So let me move into some new imperatives. So the HSPD 12 Smart Card program has been around since 2003, John. I believe that's when the original Homeland Security Presidential Directive 12 came out. So we're 8 years into this program, and so far these smart cards have served as necklace adornments. You know, they really haven't done much other than have your picture on them. Well, we're finally on the cusp of that changing, and you'll see in the next few slides what's happening in that regard. OMB, in that regard, OMB has really been stepping up the pressure. So they've issued through the budgetary process and other memorandum, increasing stipulations and requirements and deadlines on what every federal agency has to do. And granted, a lot of that prep time from 2003 to roughly 2008, a lot of behind-the-scenes work had to be done in designing these cards, getting the standards and specifications straight, getting them into production and manufacturing, building systems that supported the whole ecosystem and life cycle of how to issue the cards, make sure that they were being done properly, background checks with employees, and so on and so forth. And last summer, I believe it was July, we met the deadline of having 98% of our people enrolled in, all the people that are eligible, and that is anyone, whether it's an employee or a contractor who's at the federal government or in a federal agency for 6 months or longer, had to be enrolled in the Smart Card Issuance Program, and we met that deadline. And then by November, we had to have 97 or 98% of them actually issued in the hands of individuals. It's a very complicated process in all, and we met that deadline as well. There are still some people that don't have, particularly field assignees that are enrolled, but they haven't actually gotten a card issued to them yet. In any event, this is important. We had to get the cards in people's hands before we can go down the next steps in this program. And ultimately, this month, in fact, CDC will be issuing a policy that adopts, you know, these principles that OMB is pushing on, the most important one of which for you all is that every system has to be smart card enabled, so that not only when you log on to the network are you going to be, everybody's going to be using their smart card sometime in the relatively near future, and you'll see that in another slide. But every system has to be also smart card enabled, and that requires quite a bit of systems modification and adoption, and I'll get into how we're going to do that. There's a timeline of particularly the logical access controls, and I'm not going to go through all these boxes, and all of these slides are on the PM Summit website, I believe, so you can see this later on. But and not on this slide at all, but I'll mention is that next month through the first week of October, every physical card reader that you use to get into the buildings, onto the campuses when you come through a gate reader, into highly secured facilities and doors all throughout the agency, are going to be replaced with smart card-enabled readers. So that project, the contract's already been awarded, the equipment has been tested, all the specifications have been established in the electronics and so forth. And so that's launching next month, and there's a very strict timeline and project plan for swapping out every one of those card readers and door readers and room readers to do that. In parallel, the logical access part of this is quite important and most germane to this group. So, for example, a few weeks ago, under MISO's coordination, the Management Information Systems Office, and Tracy Hollis in particular, I don't know if she's in the audience here or on the Envision. She leads the Identity and Access Management Program office at CDC under Sandy Chapman's directorship in MISO, and in conjunction with OSEP, the Office of Security Emergency Preparedness. In any event, we have teammates from Deloitte that have been running this program for several years. Most importantly, though, in this regard, just last month, we developed some guidelines on how to begin the process of enabling systems to be smart card capable. Our first wave of this is through integrated Windows authentication. So those guides are already posted on the Information Resources Governance Council SharePoint site, so you can look it up there. We can also post them on the PM website later on. And so that was an important milestone. That doesn't cover the waterfront. We realize that, and you'll see in the next few slides what else we're doing in that regard. Another important milestone that's occurring shortly, we hope, is that Citrix had to make some changes to their product, which is the technology that underlies CITGO, our remote access technology for attaching the CDC's network or connecting to the network. And so momentarily, and maybe someone in the audience knows right now, last I heard, we hadn't had that yet. Jazz, has Citrix delivered the solution yet for web enablement, for smart card enablement? Okay, we're still working with them. So any moment now, that'll be the case. And another major one that you see, the arrow in the lower part, is that ITSO will be distributing smart card readers. These are physical little readers that will, it's a USB plug-in to your laptop or desktop in the springtime. I think May, June is the target date that we've established for sending out. I think it was 12,000 of them that we ordered. Luckily, new laptops that are manufactured have card readers built into them. So as we turn over the inventory of laptops and we go to a single computer model at CDC where laptops is the common device in general, it won't be universal, but in general it'll be a laptop versus a desktop, and those readers are already built in, and we migrate to Windows 7 pretty soon, the middleware that enables the smart card to be read and to then authenticate to the network and to systems is all built into that. So we'll get to it over the next months and years, a much better environment where we don't have to add in middleware, we don't have to have these external card reader devices. So about a year ago, we launched an application assessment survey to try to get a lay of the land with respect to how ready we were for smart card enablement in the applications portfolio. And we got about 3/4 of the system owners' responses. And I'll just flip through a few of these slides that depict, you know, the results of that survey. Of course, things have changed, no doubt, since then. And not every question was answered by every systems owner, so you'll only see a portion of the portfolio represented in these slides. But what was particularly important here is a good portion of our portfolio is already integrated Windows authentication able or capable. And that's important because that's almost a no-brainer with respect to then making it smart card enabled. On application type, the vast majority are custom apps that we develop here at CDC or modifications to commercial products. A good portion, now this represents even a smaller proportion of the application portfolio, there's only 150 or 60 systems represented here, but of that, those that it did indicate what their application language was, a good chunk of that is .NET, which is also good because it very much connects with IWA or Integrated Windows Authentication, as well as the Java applications. This is a depiction of what is the reach of our systems at CDC, how many users are there. You know, we have a pretty large component of systems that are very small, you know, work group oriented, 1 to 10 users or 10 to 100 users. At the other end of the scale, you've got the big enterprise systems, 128 of them that have greater than 5,000 users, typically CDC-wide type applications or externally facing applications that go out to our public health community at large. And John may say something more about this later, but you may have noticed if you've used the learning management system recently, it's actually now smart card enabled. It's the HHS learning management system, CAPHR, which only the HR people use typically, and eWITS is another HR application, have been smart card enabled. This is just the beginning of a tsunami of getting department-wide systems smart card enabled, and then, as I've mentioned earlier, you know, CDC will be working on this as well. One of the important fortunate features of systems that are integrated Windows authentication is that there's very little heavy lifting involved to make it smart card enabled, no additional investment, and can be done readily. But on the flip side of that, many applications will require a focused investment over time, and that's what OMB has trying to been getting our attention on, which is we shall stop spending on new development and modernization of systems until we get them smart card enabled. And you'll see that reflected in the policy that comes out this month. And I won't run through these except to say that the first four categories, and these are different kinds of ways of smart card enabling our applications. And the first four are all about different technology methods of doing that. The fifth one, or category E, is, like I mentioned with Citrix, where we have to go to the vendor to get them to enable their application because we buy it from a vendor, you know, as a commercial product, to be smart card enabled. And Citrix has been working diligently on that as one example. Category F are those systems that are, you know, in their sunset years and may not warrant being upgraded, particularly if it's a significant investment, because they're on the horizon of being retired. So we wouldn't want to be spending lots of money on something that's, you know, 6 months from being retired, for example. And category G, and I don't know if any will fit into this category, but there's always the possibility that some can't be enabled or it's too hard or too expensive, but that'll be a tough one to justify. So, you know, clearly, OMB's whole push on this and the presidential directive is to protect governmental assets across the board, our networks, our systems, and our facilities. And universality is the goal here. So this will be a tough one to justify. Last steps on this particular part of our initiative is that the guides have been posted on the IRGC SharePoint site, as I already mentioned. And those are the two of, you know, many that will come out, as well as services that wrap around those. So the IAM PMO at CDC has already begun reaching out to major applications groups and have been visiting them to dialogue with how to approach this, what the tools are, what the approaches, the technical approaches can be. And so if you're ready for that kind of assessment or engagement, please call Tracy Hollis or Sandy Chapman or Dave Florsek with Deloitte, or blanking on the other person's name, or call me and I get you in touch with them. We're developing additional guidance and developing test scripts to verify compliance, and lastly, developing pilots and prototypes. So let me get into the very last thing. Dr. Arias was going to mention in her opening remarks, and may do this if she's able to attend later on, that Dr. Frieden has challenged me and all of us collectively to do a very careful and thorough review of our applications portfolio. It's becoming ever more imperative, you know, with the focus on the federal deficit, the horizon of what we're looking at with reduced budgets in the future, to be real smart about where we spend our money. And we, you know, proliferation of systems or increases in spending in IT, you know, probably not on the horizon. In fact, haven't been in our horizon for the last 7 or 8 years when you look back at those investment trends. But we want to make sure we get the greatest value out of how we do spend money. So, you know, my personal opinion is we don't want to focus necessarily on just a count of systems. Is it good or bad to have more systems or less systems? I don't think that's the key issue. Or what the spend is necessarily. We want to make wise investments and make sure that we're optimizing our investments. Redundancy and duplication is an important area, but it's not just because people call things, you know, name systems different things and we have lots of systems. That doesn't mean that they're duplicative or redundant. On the flip side of that, we do want to make sure that we're not replicating capabilities unnecessarily or reinventing the wheel over and over again. And I'll talk a bit more about that on the next slide. Clearly, for a long time, ever since capital planning has really gotten in gear for the last 5 to 10 years, we've been reporting on developmentalist success of our portfolio. In other words, systems that are in development or modernization, we rigorously and regularly, monthly, report on how systems are doing on time, on scope, and on budget. And we do quite well in that regard. We're 90%+ in general staying on our project plans in all three dimensions. But to do a true and honest and comprehensive portfolio assessment, we really want to get into this last bullet area, which is the performance success of the application after it's delivered as well. The EPLC framework has gotten into this in large part through the operational analysis aspect, and we certainly are going to leverage and harvest the business cases that have been developed, you know, all the other materials that have been collected and analyzed along the way in the EPLC process. But we've also got to, you know, resonate that or align that with, is the system, after it's been developed and put into production, meeting its original intent? Is it achieving the performance measures that were set out in the business case, in the conceptualization of the system when it was first conceived? Is the scale of usage and the content that was expected to be in there? You know, if we build a system, we expect 50 states to be using it. Are 50 states using it? If we expected, you know, 3,000 hospitals data to be in it, did we achieve that? And what's the customer satisfaction? You know, we've not been as rigorous on this tail end of the evaluation of our portfolio on a regular and recurring basis. We're certainly going to do this mindful with, you know, starting where the big impact systems or the big dollars are being spent, and we'll likely not get to every one of the 560 systems anytime soon, if ever. But we're going to follow the money, and we're going to make sure CDC is doing well in its investment. And so I just ask everyone here, if you have ideas about how this process should unfold, what components should be in the process, what other kinds of approaches or ideas you have, please, you know, feel free to call me, message me, connect with me, and we'll dialogue over that. But this is something that Dr. Frieden and my boss, the Chief Operating Officer Bill Nichols, are very interested in, or in fact require, that we do collectively. And through your efforts, you know, in the success we've already had and in the future success I know we will continue to have, should do well in this assessment. And lastly, I'll say that one other component of that success, again, is not necessarily how many systems we have and how we count those, but rather to what extent are we sharing common software and data services. And so this idea has actually been around for several years, and we've never really, to my knowledge, picked up on it. And that is developing a registry of shared software and data services. And here are some, you know, nuggets or ideas of, you know, what might be in such a registry. It would be a complement to the Enterprise Systems Catalog and the recently released Enterprise Architecture Reference Guide. For those maybe not familiar with that, it's kind of a cookbook of, or a resource that inventories all of the kinds of things that system developers and project managers need or might need in the development and launching of a new system. So it catalogs and gives you references and URLs to all the stuff in the EPLC, all of the investment requirements in the development of business cases in OMB 300 and the post-site portfolio management tool, standards at CDC, other requirements that are necessary in developing systems, and so forth. So that's up on the EA. That's both up on the EITPO website as well as the EA Enterprise Architecture website, so that you might, if you're developing systems, you might find that a useful resource. But similarly, we'd like to complement all that with this repository or registry of shared services and shared software. It wouldn't, may not be where we actually store the software, but at least it would be a point where you could go query and find out, is there a utility, or is there a system, or is there a feature or a service, such as a web service, for example, that I can harvest or I can leverage in my application to not have to reinvent that or redevelop it. And here are some, just some notional examples of, you know, kind of entries that might be in that catalog. Wonder has a very robust environment of data resources and now XML-based APIs to be able to query and draw down data across a multitude of different public health databases. The last bullet, similarly, MISO has a people repository where we have the so-called one source of truth on all CDC staff, workforce members, both employees and contractors. For a long time, we've had security services as represented in the Secure Data Network, for example, and now coming on the horizon, SAMS, the next generation of secure data transfer with our public health partners. And, you know, the newer complement, the IAM, or Identity and Access Management Services, to go along with the smart card. And FIN services, FIN messaging, FIN directory, FIN vocabulary. So, again, these are just notional contributions to that registry. And, again, I'd solicit all of your feedback and ideas about this notion generally about creating such a registry. What kind of things would you find it useful to have to describe those elements? In other words, what ought to be the data elements in the registry, as well as other ideas of what kind of entries would be in there or could be in there, or things that you have to contribute that you've developed and should be in that shared registry. So with that, actually we're going to hold questions until the end and do them in common, but I will make one more statement, and that is for those that are contributing to the current mid-course correction on our IT strategic plan at CDC, we have a plan that was published to run 2009 through 2013. We're about halfway through that period, and Sandra and her group has been leading an effort to revise and refresh that five-year plan. We're, midway through that five-year horizon. We've got 4 or 5 dozen people that are actively engaged every Friday doing this online, virtually, asynchronously, and synchronously, or every Friday we do it synchronously. In between those situations or those times, we do it asynchronously. And I would encourage everyone that has ideas about what our goals and objectives should be on the next generation or refreshment of our plan, please get with your IRGC member or just contact Sandra's group or myself, particularly on the goals and objectives areas. We can easily get those into the process. We want to make sure particularly that we're covering CDC's public health mission more comprehensively than we have in the last go-around on the plan. And so everybody's ideas are welcome and encouraged.